Cyclone Fanatic. The Cyclone Fanatic podcast starts now.
Welcome to the Cyclone Fanatic podcast. Your weekly audio tour inside, outside, and all around the Iowa State University athletic programs. The Cyclone Fanatic podcast is powered by Iowa's most recommended realtor, Mark Charter. No other realtor comes close to offering the level of service and amenities provided by Mark Charter. Buying or selling a home in your future? Check out markcharter.com. And now, on with the show. Please welcome your hosts, Chris Williams, Adam Gray, and Mark Charter.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the, what are we calling it, the FAW, Friday After Work podcast here at CycloneFanatic.com. Brand new. It got rave reviews last Friday, and we're here on a special Halloween podcast. Mark Charter Real Estate. How are you, my friend?
I am tired, but excellent.
You're coming off of the Game 7, man. You just witnessed in person one of the greatest Game 7s of all time.
I got to go to Game 7, which was really fun. Got a Royals hat
nice.
Out of the deal.
Yeah, you're wearing it. You look nice. Looks nice.
Like my new Royals hat, but quite the experience. First time I'd ever been to the World Series. Obviously, first time I've been to Game 7. And it was memorable.
Where did you sit?
Left center field. Actually, a pretty cool little seat. Four rows out there right behind the left center field wall. I think they call them the Sonic Slam seats. So
Okay. You
take your ticket stub and get a Sonic burger or something like that.
Nice. Did you take advantage of the Sonic Slam?
I did not.
No.
I did not. But great seats for BP. So we went out there and watched batting practice, both teams. And a ball touched my glove. I reverted back to childhood because I knew exactly where I was going to be sitting. I'm like,
good
well,
for you.
I'm gonna take a glove. I didn't get anything, but I learned something that was pretty brilliant. This little kid was the only one in the sea full of 100 Royals fans. He's probably 10 years old, and he's wearing a Giants shirt. And whenever the Giants would field one close to the wall, you know, everyone yells for the ball, throw it up. And they'd spot this kid and, like, just toss it right to him.
Nice.
And so the kid got probably two or three balls. Well, the kid's a Royals fan.
Oh.
He was wearing the Giants jersey for batting practice. And
nice.
As soon as that was done, he took the shirt off and had his Royals gear underneath.
He was
underneath.
Trolling him.
So that's brilliant. That's what you got to do.
So you went with your dad?
I went with my dad. Yeah. My dad's 66 years old, and you know, I have a theory that when males get to be that age, you never know what's going to happen. It's not that he's in bad health, but
no, it's a great theory to live by. Actually,
you know,
it's
anything
really smart.
Anything can happen at that age, and it was something he didn't expect, and I had the means to make it happen. So I'm about memory creation more than I am about money. So it was money well spent to take him to the game.
That so many people listening, they might be wondering where Adam Gray is.
I don't think anybody's wondering that. But
he was actually at the game too,
mm-hmm.
And he's kind of punked out on the podcast today.
I didn't get much sleep.
Yeah, and
you know why he's even more so a wuss? Because he actually slept down there. He stayed down there.
And you drove back after the game.
Immediately after the game, we left. I got back. I was probably in bed by 3 a.m.
You probably could listen to sports talk. I mean, most...
So much of the way.
Yeah.
The call-in shows. There were some passionate Kansas City
Royals fans. Were there some pissed off people?
One guy. Here's the thing. The weird thing about the game, and I think it's because they hadn't been there for so long, they don't have the sense of entitlement like Yankees would have.
Absolutely. They're mostly like, hey, well, it was a great run.
So I didn't see anybody crying. I didn't see anybody stomping their feet. It was almost – obviously people were bummed, but it was – somewhat of an uplifting atmosphere. It's like, hey, we did really well. There's always next year. We're getting better as a team. So it was kind of a weird vibe, to be honest with you,
wasn't
as soon
there,
as the game ended.
Wasn't there like a thank you Royals chant or something like that right after the game?
Let's go Royals.
Oh, okay.
Started. You know, here's an interesting controversy too. I just saw on Facebook. I don't think this is true, but a lot of people are saying, oh, the Royals did this really class act where they turned their fountain, because they're famous for their fountains.
Yeah.
As soon as the Giants won, they turned them orange, which is true. If you look at it, it's orange, but I believe it was orange for a lot of the game.
I just think
it's a natural fountain color, but all of a sudden people are saying how great the Royals are for acknowledging the Giants. I don't think that was by design.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I was bummed out. We talked about fandom and stuff last week. And I mean, I'm not a diehard Royals fan, but they're by far my, they're easily my second favorite team based off of where I grew up. And I was more just, I have so many friends who are those diehard Royals fans. And it was like, I wanted them to win so badly for them. Like my father-in-law, for instance, is, I mean, he's Kansas City everything, man. And he was, I mean, to the point where on game six, he couldn't even watch it. And they won 10-0, but he couldn't watch it because he was so, you know, his stomach was just in knots about it. I just want, for those people, I wanted the Royals to win really badly.
One of the things, and I love Kansas City. My sister lives down there. Her kids are big Royals fans. It's a great city. It's always warmer there than it is here. The stadium is beautiful. The thing I kept thinking about, because I am a Cubs fan, eventually, hopefully, the Cubs make the World Series. And I immediately think, too, if that happens, I'd want to go. Speculation only. We have no way of knowing. But so your cheapest – so 2 days ago, your cheapest get-in ticket for the Royals was standing room only.
Yeah.
And it was about $750. Mm-hmm. I think it came down before game time.
It was like – I actually looked. It was like $550 right before.
Yeah, so right before people get freaked out, they're not going to sell their tickets and it drops. Knowing that Wrigley is much smaller, knowing the drought they've had, knowing the money that's in Chicago – what do you think the minimum ticket price would be if the Cubs make the World Series for a home game at Wrigley Field?
$1,500? $1,200?
I bet it'd be more than that.
Really?
I bet it'd be probably $2,500.
Well, see, I've never been to Wrigley, so I don't really know the setup. I mean, how much smaller is it?
It's well, I don't know what the K holds, to be honest with you, but Wrigley
40,000?
One of the smallest ballparks. Wrigley at capacity, sell it is about 40,000. I think Kauffman's bigger.
Kauffman's probably bigger than that.
Yeah, so last I checked, I think Wrigley is the smallest ballpark in the majors. But yeah, just talk about pent-up demand. It's going to be. I think it will happen. I mean, in a few years, I think that will happen for the Cubs.
I think so, too.
But it's going to be astronomical prices.
All right, Mark. We got a lot planned for today. It's Halloween, of course. So we'll touch on a little bit of that. We're going to start doing a deal here on the Friday After Work Mark Charter Real Estate Podcast. Best bets of the weekend, where you, Gray, and I are all going to pick five games. Can be NFL. It can be college. I'll probably stick to college. Knowing Gray, he'll probably sprinkle some NFL into there. We just all three of us kind of like the betting line type deal and going to attack that. So we'll do that here just a little bit later on. But you, over the weekend, kind of created a buzz on our forum. So you're let me get this straight. If Iowa State makes the Final Four, you're going to do a ticket giveaway. Is this correct?
That is correct. Yes, because I'm crazy and I like to do fun things.
Well, this is fun. So give me some details though. Like what does this entail?
So here's the first detail you need to know.
Okay.
The details are forthcoming, but we can talk about it for the sake of talking about it.
Absolutely.
So my general thought was obviously to encourage people to listen to the podcast and connect myself to them in a positive way.
You got rave reviews last week, my friend.
Yeah, that was good to see. People don't hate me yet, so give me time.
Give it time. They'll hate you eventually.
Yeah, give me time. I'll say something stupid. But the thought is that, yes, if, and here's the if in capitalized letters, if Iowa State makes the Final Four, so it isn't a Final Four ticket giveaway.
So it's not when they make the Final Four.
Yeah, so this year, if Iowa State makes the Final Four, I'm going to give away a pair of tickets to somebody that listens to this podcast. And in the upcoming weeks of this podcast, we'll release instructions on what they need to do to be eligible to win.
So like
tickets.
A scavenger hunt type deal?
I don't think it'll be that advanced, but
we've done
they're going to have to do a couple of steps. I mean, they're not going to have to do anything crazy or embarrassing, anything like that, but they might have to go like a Facebook page or they might have to do a
social media Mark Charter Real Estate scavenger hunt.
Yeah. So, yeah. And hopefully Iowa State makes the Final Four. And if they do, one loyal listener to this podcast would go with me because I'm going.
You're going to go.
Oh, absolutely.
So they'd be sitting with you?
I don't know. Okay. I don't know. That remains to be seen. We'll figure that one out. But I can guarantee that they would be in the building.
Okay. Somewhere. Well, that's all that matters.
Yeah.
You're there, that's the key.
Where is it at this year?
You know what? I was actually just going to look that up. I truly don't know.
I hate the Final Four and the fact that it's in gigantic buildings. I don't like that.
Yeah, the atmosphere is always lacking.
Basketball is not meant to be played in the biggest stadiums in the country because the seats are so far away from the court in some instances.
Oh, I know. When they're in those, like Jerry Dome.
I think it was there last year, wasn't it?
I believe so. Still not finding it, but I will eventually. I want to say it might be Is it going back to Indianapolis?
Indianapolis sounds familiar to me, but not so much that I know for sure.
2015 Division I Men's Basketball Championship. It is in Indianapolis.
There you go. Yep. So easy driving distance.
April 4th and the 6th.
Cyclone fans, even if I'm not the one buying you tickets, if Iowa State is there, that's going to be – there's going to be a lot of people going.
It's an easy drive.
Yeah.
So your first round or your second and third downs, what rounds now. Omaha is one of them.
Omaha.
So that would be – you know, Iowa State, I think if they just get like a two or a three seed, you're about guaranteed to go to Omaha.
Would go there. Yeah.
I would think. Elsewhere, Seattle, Columbus, Ohio, Charlotte, Portland, Pittsburgh, Louisville – and Jacksonville, and God forbid Dayton. Have you ever been to Dayton?
I have not. Let me ask you that, because you have, again, Cyclone Sports, et cetera. I know you know the people in the programs and have way more knowledge than I do. What is the draw to Dayton versus Wells Fargo and Des Moines?
I think that somebody at Dayton has like nude photos of Mark Emmert would be my number
Blackmail
one guess.
Is the reason?
I don't know. I'll say this. They do for that first four. It's full.
Yeah.
Like that city does support it, but I truly think that most cities would think
Des Moines would support it.
Absolutely. It is a – I don't know if they call it a traditional thing or what, but it is – it's what they do it every year. And I don't know. I mean, that's the only thing I can think of. Somebody has nude photos of somebody.
I would think that aside from the nude photo part of that commentary, Des Moines, in a very positive way, is shifting in the minds of people everywhere. So it's
because it's number one everywhere.
Everywhere. It's number one for hipsters. It's number one for business. It's number
young
one
young professionals.
For everything. So and we have a beautiful arena that's good for basketball.
Yep.
So Dayton doesn't beat us out because their arena's better. They don't beat us out because people want to go to Dayton versus Des Moines. That used to maybe be the case, but I don't think so anymore.
Hell no. Have you ever been to Dayton, Ohio?
I've not.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, and the hotels is not there. Dude, I stayed there 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
There's like the media hotel. We were in this like courtyard, like our Fairfield Inn or something like that. And it was across the street. It was nice, but that's it, man.
Yeah.
There's nothing else around that arena.
Have you been to, getting a little bit off topic, I guess, but have you been to most of the Big 12 road cities, the other Big 12 cities?
I would say most. I have not been to the Texas ones.
Okay.
Those are the only ones. I've been to Fort Worth.
Okay.
But I've not been to Waco, Lubbock, or Austin. I've been everywhere else.
Because I hear awful things about Lubbock. There's nothing good about that.
Yeah, you know, they just say it's basically just tumbleweed, man. You know.
What do you think of Manhattan, by the way?
I love Manhattan.
Do you?
It's a hidden gem. Have you ever been down there?
No, I have not.
Gotta go to Manhattan.
Describe it for me.
Do you know like what Welch Avenue is in Ames?
Yeah.
Take that, put it on steroids and times it by 20,
okay,
and you get Aggieville.
Okay.
And it's all like really like there's a lot of really classy bars there, like really cool sports bars.
Is it close to the stadium?
Is Aggieville close to the stadium?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think. I mean, it's not.
Like, is there a stadium? Like, our stadium is technically on campus, close to campus. Where is theirs in relation to campus and the students?
Yeah, it's on campus.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I know that's not always the case.
And then, like, Bromwich Coliseum's right by Aggieville and all that stuff, too. Dude, Manhattan is a hidden gem. It is in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Like, when you pass Topeka and you're driving to Manhattan, it's like, you know, there's nothing to see, man. But all of a sudden, you take a right off the interstate, and bam, you're there, and it is beautiful. I love that place.
Other than Baylor, because you said you haven't been there, and I think their new stadium looks gorgeous, especially it's right on the river. What's the best venue? Basketball and football, because I'm curious. I'm getting to know you. Best Big 12 venue, basketball and football, you've been to?
Well, it's Fog Allen.
Just because of history, or do you think the venue is actually really, really good?
I think it's good because the what makes Fog Allen so great is it's like a old school venue. So the fans are literally like you're in bleachers.
It's a little bit like Cameron indoor kind of older school feel.
It's like you're playing like watching Hoosiers.
Yeah.
That type of feel to it. But clearly the atmosphere helps.
Yeah.
But I'm not kidding. When you sit like if you're sitting in the first five rows at Fog Allen, you're on these wooden bleachers.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't, you know, The purity of it is still there.
So it's very cool. They're putting their high money donors on wooden bleachers close to the court.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I think they wouldn't tolerate that. What about football?
I really do like Kansas State, the Bill Snyder Family Indoor Stadium, just because I like saying family or family.
It doesn't look that impressive on TV.
No, but it's cool. Like it's a neat place. It's got an awesome press box. I wouldn't say that's the best. Norman's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
I think Norman's got a little bit of that Kansas basketball type feel to it, though, just because you know you're in a place where there's been a lot of history. I would say one of those two.
Yeah.
For me, Kansas sucks. What else? Stillwater's not impressive to me.
Which is surprising based on T. Boone Pickens and the money.
But the problem with Oklahoma State fans, it's just Travis Hines and I were talking about this on a podcast earlier this week. It's just that they don't, you know, how, like rabid Iowa State fans are.
Mm-hmm.
Iowa State fans are nuts, man. Clones are 5-6, and they're gonna show up and just be crazy on that final game.
Yeah,
Oklahoma State fans, man, they are.
Bail.
They're just they care, but they're not boisterous about it whatsoever. In basketball, Travis was saying last year when Iowa State went there to play in basketball. Keep in mind, this is a team picked.
I remember the crowd was sparse.
There was
on TV.
It was like a third full.
Yeah,
it was like Eddie Sutton Memorial Night. It's like a third full.
What drives apathy in sports, though? I mean, you could say, oh, you know, we're rabid in Ames because there's nothing else to do. But Stillwater, Oklahoma, there's not that much else to do in Stillwater, is there?
Well, I have some friends who cover Oklahoma State, and they all, and maybe they're just making excuses, but they've all claimed that the Thunder killed Oklahoma State basketball.
Oh, really?
And Oklahoma.
I'm surprised by that because I think there's a division in fans, a clear dividing line between people and their support of NBA and college.
Yeah.
I don't think people support them equally.
Well, let me ask you this. What would happen if Des Moines were to get an NBA team? The interest in the NBA here would skyrocket, would it not?
If Des Moines got an NBA team, I think it would sell out every night. Again, because it would be the cool thing to do in town.
Kind of like,
but I don't know that people would lose interest in Iowa State.
I agree.
The issue would be discretionary income. There's only so much to go around.
Yeah.
So they can afford both products. I don't know. Just it seems I would.
I do think it would change Iowa and Iowa State though, because our market that we are in is so college obsessed.
Yeah.
I feel like if you threw that variable in there.
Yeah.
Iowa State probably would lose some season ticket holders somewhere.
It's always fun to think about that stuff, although it's preposterous to think that an NFL or an NBA team would actually come to Des Moines because of population size, et cetera. But if the goal of a team, because you look at a team in Jacksonville, for instance,
the
huge population, they don't sell out, nobody cares. You just want to say, all right, Jacksonville, just move here.
Yeah.
You know, we'll love you. We'll fill the stadium. There's no question about
that. There's no doubt about that.
And it doesn't happen. And obviously Green Bay, they basically got grandfathered in. That's why Green Bay exists the way they do, and they're so passionate about that. I could see an Iowa NFL or NBA team becoming just like that, where everybody's all about it. It's all you do on that day, which would be really, really cool.
It would be cool to me for Iowa State and Iowa fans to actually have something to meet in the middle with.
Cheer for together.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
It would be weird in that sense.
It would definitely be weird. We'd probably be called something like the Corn Cobs or something.
Oh, they would find something lame.
Be ridiculous.
No, but to answer your question, I would say one of those two, Norman or Manhattan. But
okay.
I feel like I haven't been to the two best, Austin and Waco.
Okay, so I've been to Austin. I haven't been to many of the places. I've been, you know, sticking to Ames, I guess, mostly. But I did watch in 2006, I saw Iowa State play at Texas. And it was really hot. That's what I remember. And we lost. I don't remember the score. But older. An older feeling stadium, for sure. It wasn't a sellout, probably because it was Iowa State.
Probably.
They were playing at the time. But that one was cool. But, yeah, Waco, Baylor's new stadium, looks really cool.
Yeah, I actually read, like, a national guy was writing about that, about how this was just, like, a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
He took a tour there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was Ryan McGee, actually, from ESPN. He's ESPN, the magazine writer. And he was saying, like, it is right up there with anybody else in the country.
Hmm. Yeah.
And I believe that. I mean, that's kind of the way they're rolling down there now. Baylor doesn't do anything half-assed, really. I mean, they're
– You just wonder
they got
if they
a lot of
keep
money.
It, keep it going. Yeah, they probably can. What was your take on the first poll, by the way, football poll that came out?
You know what? I thought it was a lot made about nothing. I mean, it just because, you know, with those SEC schools, they're going to beat each other up. Like,
they play each other. So, yeah.
It's good conversation fodder.
Yeah.
But it was hard for me to get real fired up about the three SEC teams because, honestly, like, if you look at what's gone on up until now, I don't know if I can argue that.
People freaking out that Notre Dame was 10th, et cetera. I'm like, it doesn't really mean much at this point.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Knowing which teams still have to play each other, that allowed me to just kind of take a deep breath. Because there's no way it lands the way they have it set up right now.
Well, I don't think it's possible. But
what did you think? What was your initial reaction when you saw those four schools?
I agreed with it more than I disagreed with it. You know, the biggest mystery to me, I think Mississippi State's for real. I think we find out very, very soon if Florida State's for real versus Louisville. The biggest mystery to me is Florida State.
Yeah.
You know, there's no reason for them to technically not be number one. They won it last year. They came back. They haven't lost. Although they maybe should have against Notre Dame on that play. I don't know. I was just bummed to not see the Hawks in there.
So. They should have been. You know, they're underrated. Like always.
Oh, man. Yeah. So
you know what? I'm actually proud of the Hawkeye Nation, though, because I think most of them are being pretty realistic with who they are, despite the 5-2 record.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the rational ones now.
Yeah.
There's a difference.
Yeah.
The rational ones, I think, are pretty much like, it's 5-2, but my gosh, look who we've beaten and how we've beaten them.
Do you like, though, and this is common, all sports fans do this, and it's always bothered me in that common opponents, you'll link common opponents. So we beat this team, you didn't beat that team, so we're better than you. I hate that, and it's impossible to judge anything because the most recent example would be Maryland.
Yeah,
Iowa goes and loses, probably should have won, looked good early, then fell apart. And then Maryland goes and gets curb stomped at Wisconsin.
Yeah.
So now you say, okay, well, Wisconsin is way better than Iowa, and they probably are better than Iowa. But how do you judge these things?
You can't. I mean, it's just like what if Iowa had – well, they have Brandon Sheriff.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And what if one opponent has a, you know, like the worst – defensive ends in the country.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That's just one specific matchup.
Yeah.
But it's a huge matchup in the outcome of a football game. So that's why it's really hard to do that score comparison thing.
Did you happen to hear Ken Miller the other day breaking down both the teams to determine who's better by position? So he went secondary, linebackers.
No. Did he? With Iowa State and
with
Iowa?
With Iowa State and Iowa.
Okay, no, I didn't.
It was actually interesting. I typically agreed with them.
Well, Iowa State's better. They beat them in Kinnick Stadium.
And he did. He said Iowa State was better, but basically D-line he gave to Iowa. Offensive line, other than Sheriff, he gave to Iowa State. Position players, no contest, went to Iowa State. We compare them. Wiseman, yes, he's good, but in general, Iowa State's backs are more athletic.
Yeah.
I got out of the car before he got to quarterback, but I assume it was going for Iowa State.
You had to do Richardson.
Cornerbacks, safeties, I think he gave to Iowa. Cornerbacks were... both, but overall, so he went position by position like that to say, okay, now based on this, Iowa State's better in 7 positions, they're better in 6 or whatever the case was. And I didn't hear any of the feedback from that. I'm sure he got some calls from people saying that's ridiculous, you know, this team is better. But Iowa State has good skill players for sure.
They do. It is 1-85 scholarships. I said this on Ken's show on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the most talented 1-85 I've ever seen.
Really?
Yeah, I really do. And that even some of those McCarney teams that were going to bowl games, they're young. And clearly, like, the trenches is what I'm worried about in the next 2-3 years. But, like, the skill guys, I think they're set, man.
Yeah.
You don't win games there. You know, you've got to be able to develop that defensive line and to keep improving with your offensive line. I love Campos, but he can't do it alone, clearly. Some of these other guys have to – but as far as, like, if you look at that group of wide receivers, are you kidding me? Iowa State's never had anything close to that. Maybe Blythe and Sumrall and John Davis, but after those guys, Iowa State can go, like, 6 deep there next year.
I was impressed with the last – so I played wide receiver, so I'm always focused on that position. That's what I watch. And – the Toledo game was the last one I saw in person, and they were catching everything.
Yeah.
With the hands. I mean, they looked great.
Two true freshmen out there.
They looked great. A lot of third down conversions, et cetera. Lazard is shaping up to be everything people thought he was.
Yeah.
And I love to see that he's playing so much,
yeah,
frankly, because I thought they'd let him rot for a year. So that was good that they didn't do that.
Jawan Wesley, the other freshman, I don't know if you've seen him much, but he's going to be really good. And we haven't even seen Quentin Bundridge, who tied a school record in touchdowns last year.
Got injured
year.
On what, the first play
yeah.
this year?
First play
What's,
of the game. First series of the game.
West. Is he back?
Jarvis. No, he's gone. He'll be back for Oklahoma.
Yeah, he'll be back for Oklahoma.
Well, supposedly. They've been telling us that for a while.
Okay.
He's supposedly back, though.
Who's the, in your opinion, I'm jumping all over the place, but it's a podcast. You can do that.
Yeah, that's what we do here.
Who is Iowa State's future quarterback?
What do you mean by future? I can 3 years or in next year?
As soon as our current quarterback is gone, who's going to be our next guy?
I would say Grant Rohatch.
You think?
He's won two games in the Big 12 as a freshman.
What about Lanning?
Well, you know, and I think like it's just like a talent skill set. I think Lanning's probably the guy, but it's just I think from what I've understood, he's really struggled with the Mark Mangino system. Now, I feel bad for Joel Lanning because he comes in as a true freshman, learns Messingham. Messingham's gone. That's a really hard thing for a young quarterback who's literally never seen a live bullet coming at him on a field before, right?
Do the brain flush on
that's
that
hard.
Material.
So it's really hard to say, and that's but like benefit of the doubt, I would give it to Grant Rohatch at this point in time because he's actually proven he can win in the Big 12 with a pretty bad offense and an awful scheme around him.
Yeah,
at the last year.
Yeah,
at the end of last year. But Richardson's the guy next year. No
the one question.
Question
I'd like to ask Coach Rhodes if I was sitting down at Applebee's having a cheeseburger with him. You know, off the record, et cetera, I'd love to know how frustrating it is to know that there's so many very, very, very talented quarterbacks in this country that are third string on other teams.
Yeah.
You know, the third string guy, Florida State, whoever that is, or Alabama. You know, that guy would be awesome here.
Yeah.
And they don't come here. And that has to be frustrating to the coaching staff.
Absolutely.
Come here and become a legend. Go there and win a national championship, but you're not seeing the field.
Yeah.
You might be part of it. I don't understand the mentality. I think there'd be a kid out there would say, I'm just going to go and become a legend here and play.
Yeah.
Because isn't that what it's about?
Kind of like Al Lazard just did.
Well, yeah. Isn't that what it's about if you're a player? You want to play the game? I don't understand these people that are okay sitting as a backup for 3 years. It doesn't make sense to
me. Well, kind of like, wasn't there a kid last year who signed with Alabama from the state of Iowa? He was in Eastern Iowa. I think at one point he was an Iowa commit, and he ended up going to Alabama. Kind of the same situation.
Yeah.
You could be, like, the man in your home state, or you could go there. And maybe he has a great career and goes pro. Who knows?
Yeah.
But chances are, if you're going to go play the offensive line at Alabama, you're sitting at least 3 years.
Yeah.
At least 3 years.
Yeah.
No, I get what you're saying.
And then you look at players like, you know, Tim Dwight jumps to mind. What would have happened to Tim Dwight if he went to Florida State?
He would have been a guy instead of the guy.
Would he have blended in? Yeah. I mean, the guy's a legend because of what he did here. So you're in position to do that, either at Iowa or at Iowa State. If you come and have an amazing career, you're the Chuck Long that people still talk about, you know, 30 years later, et cetera.
So. I remember back in the Greg McDermott era, there was a JUCO basketball recruit. He's one of the top JUCO recruits in the country. His name was Tyrone Appleton.
Mm-hmm.
And Iowa State was all in on him, man. They needed him.
Yep.
And he ended up choosing Kansas over Iowa State.
Mm-hmm.
He went to Kansas. I mean, he played both of his seasons there.
Obviously did nothing since I don't know who this person is.
Like, I don't even think he barely played his junior year. And that senior year, I think maybe like 5 minutes a game. Mm-hmm. So he may have even I don't even remember. Yeah. That's how irrelevant he was.
Yeah.
But that's a guy who, if he comes in and has a decent attitude, he's playing 35 minutes a game for that McDermott team.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And your team might suck, but at least you're going to have an opportunity.
Yeah. You know what I love about Iowa State basketball right now? And I got caught up in – I don't usually get caught up in recruiting, but this past offseason with Rashad Vaughn and him not picking the Cyclones, and I got over it pretty quick. But I love the fact that we're at the place as a program where we look at these players – and we say, why wouldn't they come here?
Yeah.
They come here on a visitation day, and they see 14,000 fans at Hilton. They see it going crazy.
Yeah.
They're seeing all the headlines about Hoiberg and the players that are going on to play pro ball, et cetera, for the first time in a long time, we're legit, and I feel like we have a chance to get these types of guys. And obviously, he chose something else for his own reasons, but it's nice to know that we had a shot.
Well, and there's more guys like that in the pipeline coming up who they're, you know, that I appreciate that about the Hoiberg staff, because I think a lot of times in the past, football and basketball, and rightfully so, I mean, you only have so many recruiting hours. Mm-hmm. You don't want to waste your time on a guy you have no chance at getting.
Yeah.
That's the worst thing you could do. That's worse than signing a guy who sucks, because at least you can maybe develop that guy and turn him into a player.
Yeah.
But the Hoiberg staff looks at it as, we want to win a national championship.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I didn't cover the team back in the Floyd Eustachy years, so I'm not real up on. You would have more insight on this than I would, but
the Pfizer Tinsley years.
Yeah, this is the first time though in my time being around the program though where you've got guys openly talking about national championships.
Yeah,
because I don't back then though, like, that was kind of a taboo thing to do, to bring that up, wasn't it?
I mean, the year that Pfizer, his last year's junior season, I think.
Yeah.
They could have won the national championship.
No, and I think they were in the back of a lot of people's minds were thinking, man, we could do this. But Hoiberg goes out at frickin' Hilton Madness and talking about hanging championship banners, and it's like, man, that's awesome.
Which is exciting.
Yeah.
Do you think, too, that you look at the Kentuckys of the world where they're basically openly supporting one-and-done players? They don't care.
Yeah.
I mean, these guys probably, I assume, and it's been a while since I've been in school, but they kind of have to go to school the first semester, and the second semester, I don't think they have to go to class to play, do they? I mean, because if you know you're going to be leaving school.
Absolutely.
So they can kind of do whatever they want. Well, Hoiberg has, in a sense, one and dones or two and dones in transfers.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's been a big part of his program. But so far, there hasn't been a lot of one and done freshman type talent.
Correct.
Do you see it going that way, or do you think Hoiberg doesn't have any interest in that type of player?
No, he does. If he can get those guys, he'll absolutely take them. Rashad Vaughn would have been the same type.
Yeah.
If he would have, and they went nuts over him. You know what I mean? No, he'll absolutely take those guys if he can get them.
Okay.
But the thing about that's interesting about basketball now, there's basically two periods. There was always the spring period.
Mm-hmm.
But like 10 years ago, the spring period, the guys were so bad. Or they were JUCOs who had high-risk guys was that spring period. Now, like, the transfer is like an entirely – it's free agency is what it is.
Yeah.
I was reading an article about Anthony Lee, who's at a Temple transfer. Iowa State recruited him.
Yep.
Temple transfer is now at Ohio State, and he said the morning after he got his release from Temple, he's a graduate transfer, so he's got 1 year to play immediately. He said he had like 40 text messages from different coaches around the country. Yeah, I mean, it's just those guys are in such high demand because they're proven.
Yeah,
that's the thing. There's oftentimes some baggage, but if you can get through that, oftentimes there's not though. Jake Anderson from a few years ago, you know, he was a graduate transfer. Wasn't any baggage there. I would say with DeJuan Jones and Kane, there was absolutely baggage, but Hoiberg was able to deal with it.
I don't know if they're the top school, but when it comes to transfers looking to go somewhere else, obviously, especially ones that have had trouble somewhere else, is Iowa State in that top five now?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Well, but it's because they were kind of the pioneers who started this, but now, like, it's not taboo anymore. You see Duke doing it.
Yeah.
I think Iowa State, it was like a negative – some negativity was cast upon them when they started doing this.
Yeah.
In fact, I know there was. And now, I mean, they've proven that it can work. Now they're still doing it more than other people.
And Royce was kind of the start of it, wasn't he? The first name.
Well,
and this guy had trouble here, and now he's coming to Ames.
It was Royce. It was Chris Babb. It was Chris Allen. And Anthony Booker all came in together.
And it's funny because you hear that now, and you look back, you're like, those guys were awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, they had good attitudes. They played together. So what was all the drama about?
I saw Bloom tweet out. This was like a week ago. And it's so true. He said if Fred could get Chris Allen and Royce White to play together, chemistry will never be a problem. And there's some truth to that. I mean, they weren't bad guys.
Yeah.
But those are two massive egos.
Yeah.
Two massive egos you got to blend together.
That is where coaches make their money. If they can convince people that are somewhat selfish in nature that team is more important, you can't overemphasize how important that is. That's everything.
Everybody loves to win.
They do. Winning's a hell of a lot better than losing.
Well,
no question.
And that's the point, because I think this year, there's not enough minutes to go around.
Yeah.
Somebody, there are multiple guys will not be
happy. They got seven, eight guys this year that can legitimately be starters, technically speaking.
Yeah. It could be starters, but you can go probably 11 deep guys who should be getting quality Big 12 minutes. Not everybody's going to be happy. And my point, if you're winning, it's a lot easier to deal with that than if you're struggling to hang around 500.
I agree.
All right. Let's get on to our best bets. Before we do that, now you had a seminar the other night. What would you call this? I want to inform people about this.
It was a home buyer workshop.
Workshop. Okay.
Yeah. So it was an impromptu. Well, not impromptu. It was scheduled, but it was a casual get together. I think there were about 8 people there. It was intended for first time buyers, but technically, if I do another one, and I'm planning to do another one, anybody that's bought a home before, but maybe had a bad time with it or felt like they didn't get things explained to them properly, would come out. But basically what I did is I walked through the steps of the process. How do you buy a home from start to finish? Pros and cons of owning a home, which I think a first-time home buyer should hear, because it isn't all pros. There's certainly cons to that. Really importantly, the role of an agent. How I get paid, what I do for you, what my expectations of you as a client are. How do we work together to make this a good process? So basically just walk through everything. And then I had a lender that I use that I routinely refer out. He came and did 15, 20 minutes on financing, which is a huge part of buying a home. You need to make sure you can buy the home.
Yeah.
So it went really well. People learned a lot. You know, the cheesy statement that knowledge is power is true. If you know what's coming when you're going to buy your first home, it isn't a scary experience anymore.
Yeah.
And the way to remove all the fear is to link up with an agent that knows what they're doing, because then they're just going to say, hey, I'll tell you what to do.
Yeah.
Follow me and we'll get you home and we'll get you closed. There's nothing scary about that, but you have to find the right agent. Frankly, there's a lot of agents out there that are bad at what they do.
I've heard some horror stories.
Or they won't be doing it a year from now.
Yeah.
You know, 50% of new agents every year are not in the business a year later. So it's an easy business to get into. Doesn't cost a lot. You just put in some classroom time. But it's a tough business to stay in and get good at.
Yeah.
So the people that have been doing it for year after year after year, like I've been in 9 years, obviously we've figured out the game.
Yeah.
And there's no surprises to us anymore. So my encouragement to anybody listening when it comes to real estate is, whether it's me or somebody else, link up with an agent that's well-reviewed. Multiple people have said good things about that person, not just one. And then link up with that person. There's no magic to it. Just partner up with somebody that has lots and lots of experience, and the process should be pretty easy for you.
What I like about you, though, it's kind of, you don't seem like a BS type of guy.
No.
It's just
no.
Ask a question, you answer.
I tell you what's going on.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
All right. We'll keep people, if you do another one of these workshops, let us know, though.
I will. Yeah. And if they want more information on me, they can go to my website, which is markcharter.com.
All right. Best bets.
Yep.
I figure maybe we let Adam Gray go first since he's not here.
Can I be Adam Gray? Those are good picks, Adam. Way to go.
Okay, I've got Adam Gray's.
Hey, before we start this, related to this though, can we put something on this? Can we like track this season?
No, yeah, we're going to every week. We're going to keep this.
Okay.
We'll updated standings.
I think we need to do like more than bragging rights. We got to put beers on this or something.
Case of beer?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
No, how about this? So we partner with the cake stand.
Yeah.
Down in West Des Moines, we do a lot of stuff. See, they've got like the cool. They got like a million beers.
Yeah.
I say we do a night. Whoever gets last, just got to pick up the tab for a night.
All right.
How's that sound?
I'm good with that.
We'll do it like a holiday edition.
Okay.
Right before Christmas. Last podcast before Christmas, right before bowl season. Boom.
All right.
All right. You good with that?
Yeah.
Gray will agree to those terms.
Totally fine.
I'm looking at Gray's picks for the first time right now, and this is actually kind of crazy. We actually have 3 of the same.
I might be in there too. I don't know. There were some games that stood out to me for various reasons, but go ahead. Tell
okay,
me what his are
here. Adam's are Ole Miss at -2 because Auburn hasn't played well in either of their road games.
Okay.
I also had Ole Miss.
I do not have that game.
Okay. I got him at 2 as well.
Okay.
And my take on that was basically, I think I'm a believer in Ole Miss and their talent coming off a loss. You're at home, frankly, I just think they're too good of a team to lose two in a row, one at home.
Can you explain that throw Bo Wallace made at the end of the LSU game?
Cannot explain.
That's what just, a garbage play that was.
That's just Bo being Bo, baby.
Wow, that was bad.
At home, he doesn't make that, and Gray makes a good point.
Awful, awful play.
Auburn in a true road game has not been great this year. He likes Arkansas at plus 10.5 at Mississippi State. A physical run game keeps them in it. I did not take that one. Kansas State at minus 12 against Oklahoma State. He says he's off the Oklahoma State bandwagon. Mm-hmm. They stink. I also had that game.
Okay.
I had
you have it the same way, too.
Yeah, I've got Kansas State at minus 12. Oklahoma State now. Here you go.
Mm-hmm.
0-4-1 against the line in their last five. Snyder's 14-5 at home in his last 19.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And you said that was 12? The line, 12 and a half, 12.
Well, that's where I saw it at
I generally hate lines right in that range. It's tough to pick because they could win the game easily and still win by 10. I mean, it's a tough one. But anyway, yeah, okay.
So you haven't had any of those?
Nope.
Okay. He also likes the other OSU, Ohio State, at 28.5 over Illinois. Big line. Illinois has lost three road games by an average of 22. I don't like those hooks, man. 28.5. I would take.
When I bet, I buy that hook down.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to lose by the half point.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I don't like that hook whatsoever. I would, not knowing a lot about either one of those teams, honestly, I don't watch a ton. I would take Illinois there.
Here's the pack I've made with myself. Two teams specifically, Illinois and Purdue. Not betting on those teams anymore. You do not know who's showing up to week at all.
Purdue's been decent against the spread on the road. Because Nebraska at 20 is 27 or
it's 20,
23.5.
Yeah.
I thought about taking Nebraska. I didn't end up going with it.
Yeah.
But then I read about Purdue's trends on the road.
Yeah.
They're not bad on the road this year.
So I did I took I don't remember the spread, but when Iowa played Purdue.
Yeah.
Purdue looked like the worst team in college football.
That quarterback play. Oh,
right?
My gosh.
Awful. And then they go and they hang tough against Notre Dame. And I did do that game and lost because I took Notre Dame to cover and it wasn't even close. Wasn't even close.
Yeah, it's tough. It's kind of like Kansas, too. It's really – they've covered three in a row, but can you really put any faith on them on the road at Baylor this week?
Yep.
Heck no.
Yep.
And Gray, here's another one I matched up with. He likes Oregon at minus 8 over Stanford. His point is statement game for Oregon to get back in the race. Mine is more the trends all tell you to take Stanford here. They always cover against Oregon. But I go with the Ken Miller theory here. That line has dropped 5 points.
Mm-hmm.
That opened at 13.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going against the people here, and I'm going to take the Oregon Ducks because of that.
Okay.
And I think Gray's got a little bit of that's a team still. Oregon still has a – do they have a shot at the playoff?
Yeah.
Yeah, they still do.
Absolutely.
This is a big game for them. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So now I'll give you my other two, and we'll get to yours. I like Baylor at 35 over Kansas. Huge line, I know. And as I already noted, Kansas has covered three in a row since firing Charlie Weiss. But, dude, Art Briles is 19-3 at home since 2011. They're coming off of a loss. They're focused. They're probably a little bit pissed off. That's why I like Baylor in
You're
that
envisioning
one.
The drive chart for Kansas to look like punt, 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 INT,
and
punt.
Baylor to score on like three plays every time they get the ball.
Yeah.
Kind of like the Iowa State.
I can see it. I cringe at lines that big, but I can see it happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if Baylor beats West Virginia by 21 their last time out, I don't think I take this.
Yeah.
I think it's more of a
They got their act together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a slight chance, not a good chance at all. They still have a slight chance at a playoff berth.
Well,
very slight.
If everyone in front of them starts losing.
Yeah.
Sure.
So
sure.
You need style points. And Art Briles is not above running it up on anybody.
Yep.
So if they get a shot, I think they score 70 here.
Okay.
I really do.
Okay.
And the final game for me, I like Oregon. I like Mississippi. Oh, I went with Iowa State. It's 16.5.
There you go.
Quietly. Mark, quietly, Iowa State has been very good against the spread this year. 5-1-1 this season.
Okay.
4-0-1 as a dog. The offense is trending up.
Mm-hmm.
Oklahoma's trending down. I would also consider the over at 63. I think it's a high score. I think it's a lot like the Texas game we just saw.
I don't disagree with you there. My only hope is figure out a way to cover Sterling Shepard for Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Do something different with that guy because I don't want to see him streaking down the field by himself.
He probably will. He probably will.
Oh, man, he's good.
I'm just banking on, and I could be wrong here, it's foolish of me to put too much faith in the Iowa State offense, but I'm banking on the continual improvement that we've seen with them. If that happens, if they're scoring 38 points a game like they did at Texas, they scored 45, one of them is a defensive touchdown.
Yeah.
But if that offense is giving that sort of production, they're going to be in most games throughout the rest of the season.
Yeah. I didn't pick that game, but I think Iowa State could cover as well. So, all right, my five, one in common with you guys out of the five. Florida State, 3.5 over Louisville.
Okay.
I think Florida State knows that they need to bring it. They haven't yet. They're winning. They're not winning impressively. This is a game where a lot of people are thinking they might get upset.
Yeah.
I don't see it that way. I got them covering.
Are you a believer in if all the money's going one way, go the other? That's what Ken Miller always tells me. He's talked about it on the radio, I guess I should say.
In a sense, I think if you can tap into trends, more importantly is the early money, the early money's going.
Because that's
where the sharps are getting it.
Yeah.
They get the line first, and they're going to move it. But not everybody thinks that way or knows that. So, but here's what I do know. When a line seems so obvious that you're going to pay off your house with this bet you're about to make, those are the lines you usually lose.
Like that TCU-Oklahoma game earlier this year, and everybody freaked out about it.
TCU-Oklahoma, and Ken talks about this one. It jumps out to me all the time. The Iowa State-Drake basketball game.
Yeah.
When Iowa State was a one-point favorite.
Royce White went into there,
I think.
Yeah.
And they lost.
I know a lot of people who got burned
I thought
that
they were going to win by 15 or more.
Yeah.
So the question was, what in the world does Vegas know?
Yeah.
How did they know that?
Yeah.
So Vegas amazes me consistently. Okay. So Florida State 3.5 over Louisville.
And just to note too, we recorded this on Thursday evening.
I'm not predicting already known outcome.
Yes. I want the people to be clarified when they're listening to Friday after work and they're having a cold Busch Light and tuning into their favorite podcast.
Yeah.
So now, like, Mark, you can be harshly judged or you could be praised for this prediction.
Absolutely, because everyone will know the final score.
Yes.
All right. Take it easy, Cyclone fans. But I've got Iowa -4 over Northwestern.
I don't hate that.
I just think, again, Iowa plays pretty well at home. I don't think Northwestern is very good. Traditionally, Northwestern has played Iowa really tough.
Yes, they have.
I've seen Northwestern play. I don't like them. So -4.
Okay.
The Oregon game, I added it at -8 as well over Stanford. I think Oregon really kicks the crap out of Stanford.
Wow.
I don't think it's by 10.
See, I have by 10.
I think it's by like 21, 24 points. Okay. I think they're just going to give it to them. Especially, I think it's, what, been 2 years in a row Stanford's beaten Oregon?
Yeah.
So I think they're gonna get that figured out. Move to the NFL for my last two.
Okay.
Steelers over Ravens is a pick'em game. I'll take the Steelers at home over Baltimore. Big Ben coming off 522 yards passing.
Yeah.
They're looking good.
Insane. I had him on my fantasy bench.
Most people did.
Yeah.
Most people did. Yeah. My last one, Eagles -2 over the Texans at Houston. Eagles are just better. Nick Foles is better than Fitzpatrick from Harvard. J.J. Watt is awesome, and Arian Foster is awesome, but I like the Eagles' offense, so I've got them -2 over the Texans.
How hard is it to bet the NFL?
It seems harder than college.
Yeah, because there's just so much more
harder than college
competition. And
yeah. The major difference is the lack of variety in over-unders.
Yeah.
So the NFL is generally 38 to 45 points, somewhere right there, where college, we just had a game this last week where it went to 100 points. Who was that? Somebody won.
The TCU game. They scored 82.
Yeah, well, not even that one. There was another one because that one went over 100. I think that was 82 to 27. There was one that was 59-41. Might have been the Oregon game when they played Cal.
Yeah.
100 points.
That's insane.
That just doesn't happen in the NFL at all. So college is much, much easier. Yeah, here's the thing that I always remember when I bet. There's no such thing as a sure thing. If you're listening to this and we're getting you in the mood to wager, remember, there's no such thing as a sure thing.
This is all for fun.
This is all for fun. But what's crazy is you're putting your money on the line, and we don't know Did the quarterback for Oregon get dumped by his girlfriend last
night? Yeah, exactly.
You don't know those things.
Yeah.
Was there a fight in practice this week and the players all hate each other?
Yep.
So we put our money on the line and we hope that we have the accurate information, but we never have everything we need.
Yep.
So you come out some weeks and it's like, what happened to my team? They were just flat. Well, maybe they had a locker room argument that week and they weren't playing together. Mm-hmm. That's what makes me keep selling real estate and not get into the sports betting full time and moving to Vegas.
Yeah.
But I feel good about my picks. I feel good about having a week one lead over you guys. And we'll see what happens.
I'm not crazy about mine. Honestly, I mean, I'm all right with them. I didn't even look at an NFL line. But the college games, the last couple of weeks have been tough.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen a line in like 2 weeks that I'm like, man, that is a sure thing. I did really like which one was it? There was one 2 weeks ago that I really liked. It doesn't matter. People don't care.
The surest line I saw this year was Iowa State at Iowa.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, Vegas does not give Iowa State enough credit when they go on the road to Iowa. A couple of years ago, it was a 17-point spread.
Yeah,
Iowa State
won. Ridiculous, yeah.
So usually it's a big number, so I like that. Not only should we do the beer, though, for the payoff, I think I should create a dunce cap. So, like, the weekly loser, the next time we do the podcast, has to wear the cap the whole time.
Well, I'm fine with that.
He's the loser of the week.
The loser.
Nobody will see it.
Yeah.
But it'll be enjoyed by
so,
me.
No, this will be good. Maybe I get Ryan from the keg stand involved, and he could give a throne to the winner night while we're drinking.
There you go.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. I'm sure he'd be all game for that. All right. There's your best bets, the Mark Charter Real Estate Podcast. We're just nearing in on an hour, so we probably better go, but it's Halloween. You got any Halloween plans? Are you dressing up?
Again, so this is Thursday. So tonight in Ankeny is Beggar's Night.
Yeah.
When is Halloween? Is it tomorrow night? The actual Halloween?
Yeah, Halloween is Friday.
So my wife spent a lot of time getting a cardboard box and spray painting it and gluing things to it, et cetera, because my 3-year-old son said that he wanted to be a Lego guy. And then in a closet, he found a monster costume that we had, and now he's going to be a monster.
Oh, okay.
So she went to that extent. Oh, by the way, I cannot forget this week. I got hammered at home because apparently I didn't mention my family last week when we did this. So
you got in trouble?
I got in trouble, yeah. My wife said, well, thanks for the love. So anyway,
Well, I mean, you're here working. It's to support your family. That's love, man.
It's true.
That's love.
It's true. But here you go. So quick recap.
Okay.
I've been married for 10 years.
Okay.
My wife's name is Katie.
Katie.
We met very early on. We both went to Ames High together.
Aim High.
Yep. So we've been together a long, long time, but married 10 years. I have a son. You sports fans will know this name, Seton, just like Seton Hall University. So are you like me? Do you think P.J. Carlissimo when you hear Seton Hall University? They used to be good at basketball.
When I think P.J. Carlissimo, I think about him getting strangled.
By Spreewell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Spree.
So, but anyway, before that, he was the coach at Seton Hall,
yep.
And they were good in basketball.
All
so
right.
We didn't name him that name for that. We just liked the name Seton. So Seton is 3, and then my daughter is 4 months old, and her name is Hollis. And we have no reason for that other than we liked
Are good names.
Like the names.
They're different names. I like that.
We wanted unique names. I have a theory that when you get introduced to somebody, it's much easier to remember Seton than it is Mark. Because everybody knows other Marks. Everybody knows other Chris's. We have common names.
Yeah.
So.
We have boring names.
We do. Thanks, Mom and Dad.
Yeah. All right. So what are you going to dress up as?
I'm going to dress up as the dad that stands out at the sidewalk.
Good for you.
When my kid walks up there. Are you dressing up?
No. Well, I've got to go to radio when we get done with this.
Yeah.
And this is the second year in a row where the Williams house in Bondurant is dark.
Yeah.
It's dark for Beggar's Night. But I went with now you tell me if this would be – my wife and I had a debate about this.
Mm-hmm.
Because she has to work until 8 as well. The young kids are done trick-or-treating by 8.
Yeah.
I said, hey, you know, I feel bad turning our lights off because for all they know, we're just
hiding.
Yeah, we're hiding from the kids, which is not the case.
Yeah.
So what I did was I put a huge bowl of candy on my porch and I said, hey, take one.
Yeah.
And I turned the light. Would you let your kid take a piece of candy from my house?
Sure.
Okay. That's what I told her.
From a danger perspective?
We're freaking in Bondurant. Well, you know what I mean? Like, everybody knows who we are
there.
So
if you're like me, you grew up with the story that, okay, someone's putting like pens into the chocolate bars, et cetera.
Yeah, like knives.
Do you know of any legitimate instances where that actually happened? It's just one of those wives' tales that people believe. But the problem with the trick-or-treating is, do you stay home? Now, when you get when my kids get older, we can stay home and pass it out, but we can't do that yet because they're young, so we have to go with them.
Yeah.
So last year we did exactly what you did. Lights on. We were in our neighborhood walking around, but we put the bowl out and said, help yourself, take one.
Yeah.
And when we came back, the bowl was empty.
Oh,
people take six instead of one. And then she's not listening, but the joke is a couple years ago, we had a neighbor girl that literally came back like three or four times because she's like a couple houses away. She kept coming back and she's a little bit overweight.
Stocking up on the candy, eh?
Yeah. Yeah. So the joke became, if we leave the bowl of candy out, the little girl's going to come and take the whole bowl. So I hope she's not a Cyclone fan to listen to this. They're going to be like, I know what she's talking about.
Like her dad's going to be like listening to this driving home from work on Friday.
You're talking about my daughter.
We're expecting our first child in February.
Nice.
Yes, looking forward to it. And the wife and I actually got into a debate last night over who goes trick or treating next year and who has to hand out the candy. But now I'm thinking we both go trick or treating.
Bowl on the sidewalk. Yeah.
Because I don't want to miss that. I want to be there.
You're already planning ahead to where the trick or treating is all for you.
Yeah.
Because your kid's not going to be old enough to care.
No, the kid's going
to
be like, it's going to be like 6 months old at that point. Eight months.
Do you know what you're having? Are you sharing it?
No, we're going to find out when the baby comes out.
That is risky.
Hey, you know what? Like
risky.
It seemed like a really good idea.
Yeah.
And now we're to the point where she's at, I think, 26 weeks, 25 weeks, something like that. And you actually have to get stuff done.
Oh, yeah.
And it's really complicated not knowing
what
we're
having. Nurseries and gift registries.
Yeah.
It does make it more difficult.
I'm doing that the day after the Kansas-Iowa State game.
Yeah.
I'm painting everything. And so I'm just going really basic, like a gray.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you got to just buy generic everything.
Are you freaking out a little bit or no?
No, not at all.
I'll admit, I went MIA for like a day after my first child was born because it just hit me that, oh man, I've got this thing to be responsible for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And that felt pretty overwhelming. And then like I held him for like an hour and I'm like, dude, this is awesome.
Yeah.
You know, I love my son. Second child, none of those feelings at all.
Yeah.
Like the second one is so much easier compared to the first one because you've done it all. You've changed the diapers. You know they're going to cry.
I've never changed a diaper. I'm 30 and never changed a diaper.
Hey, come on over. I'm close by. I've got a four-month-old that would appreciate it.
No, like I say, I'm not freaking out. I think it's one of the advantages to having children late.
Yeah.
And I don't have a problem with having them early either.
Yeah.
It's just I feel like I'm so much more ready now than if I when I first moved back up here and started doing Cyclone Fanatic, I was not ready to be a father.
Are you going to classes and stuff?
Oh, gosh. Every Tuesday.
Yeah.
For 2 hours every Tuesday. I've missed two World Series games, but I've DVR'd it and, like, avoided the phone.
Yeah.
But, they're pretty insufferable, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, I had to watch these two, like, live births the other day. It was disgusting.
It's not pleasant.
Well, and I get what I'm walking into there when it's my wife.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, like, I don't want to watch, you know, Jane from Arkansas give birth.
Yeah. My, obviously, my wife has given birth two times, but she had a C-section both times, so that we didn't have to go through that.
You kind of avoided, like, the placenta flying out of the vagina and all that.
You know what I was surprised by, though? like, TV is full of crap.
Yeah.
If you watch TV shows and they're having a birth, it's full of crap. My wife, the first time she was in labor, it was the middle of the night. She ended up having the C-section, but at that point she was pushing. And it was like 3 in the morning. And there's a nurse on one side of the bed holding one of my wife's legs.
Yeah, I learned this.
I'm on the other side, right? And the nurse is saying, all right, go ahead and bear down and push. And I'm thinking, where in the crap is the doctor? There's no doctor anywhere in sight. It's just a nurse and me. And I'm thinking, what happens if a head starts to come out here? So it was totally they don't tell you this is how it's going to be. Like,
no.
I didn't cover that in class at all.
No.
And fortunately, nothing occurred. But it just felt like really anticlimactic. Okay, you're about to have a kid, and it's just you and a nurse in the room at 3 in the morning, and your wife's trying to have a baby.
Yeah.
So welcome to it.
We learned that we learned the birth this last Tuesday.
Yeah.
And apparently I'm supposed to hold the other leg.
Yeah.
That's like the thing you're supposed to do, right?
Yeah.
To me, like, raising the child doesn't bother me at all.
Yeah.
I feel like it's the actual birth.
Yeah.
It's like driving to the hospital, getting there in time.
Yeah.
Am I supposed to hold the leg this way?
Yeah.
And there's like all this pressure on the guy to like be giving massages and all this stuff.
Oh yeah, that was why my wife liked going to any classes because they would say, "Okay, get on the floor
freaking
and massage."
Freaking had to rub my wife's back for like a half hour the other night. She gets that at home.
You don't strike me as an emotional guy. Are you emotional at all?
You know what? Certain things trigger me, but I wouldn't say I just wear my heart on a sleeve, though.
I'm willing to bet, and and now that I say that, you'll probably try to fight it back, but I'm willing to bet the first time you see your child, if you don't cry, you'll feel very, very emotional.
No, I bet I will.
There's this thing, and it's corny because we talk about it in relationship to girls, generally about love at first sight.
Yeah.
That didn't happen with my wife. It doesn't happen with most people where they're in love with someone at first sight. They may think that person's hot or whatever.
Yeah.
You love your child at first sight.
Yeah.
And it's an unbelievable experience that you can't possibly know about until you do it. So mm-hmm. It's cool. You get to experience it coming up and
looking forward to it.
It's a journey unlike anything else you could do, man, being a parent, but it's super rewarding.
That's good to hear. More. The real miracle here is that my wife actually she hasn't left me yet. You know, like I've made it 5 years with her. So that's the upset. We're talking lines. I mean, the over under on our year's marriage put by friends and family was like 2.5. So
the real like they say, the 7-year itch. So you're a couple years away from that.
Getting close.
So you're doing good. The first 5 years, that's the honeymoon phase. You guys are doing fine.
Yeah. All right. MarkCharter.com. If you need to sell your house, if you need to buy a house, he's a good guy to just talk to about the market because it's confusing. There's a lot of stuff that you may think you know, but you probably don't know. This guy does know. When are we going to we got to keep talking about this Final Four thing, get people pumped up, and
maybe next week we can release maybe a first detail.
A clue?
About that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I'll come up with something for next week.
All right. Sounds good. He's Mark Charter. I'm Chris Williams. We fully anticipate an ailing Adam Gray to be back next week. Did you hear him? He couldn't even talk, though.
He's a wuss.
He sounded pretty pathetic, but I do think that he kind of bailed on us, but whatever. He's Mark. I'm Chris. Thanks for listening, everybody.